With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
This is the Hockey Podcast Network, your home for hockey talk on every team in the NHL.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Tip of the Iceberg Podcast, brought to you as always by the Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Nick Berlansky, and joined as always by Nick Horwat, as we are here to break down last night's Game 5 between the Pittsburgh Penguins and the New York Rangers. Plenty to discuss when it comes to the downfall or whatever.
How about every part of the game?
Every part of the game.
Opening 20 seconds all the way till the final minute. There wasn't a dull moment that couldn't be talked about in this matchup. And is a lot of Pittsburgh pissed off, and rightfully so.
Yes, so we'll get into all of that for sure. And then, of course, we'll go forward and preview Game 6, which will be on Friday evening at PPG Paints Arena in Pittsburgh. And then, of course, finish it off with shout-outs and call-outs, which might also still correlate with this specific series. So
I've had mine for a while, actually. So my shout-outs and call-outs have nothing to do with the series.
Fair enough. One of mine does. But we'll get to that at the end of the show. Yeah. Let's start with this game. Let's not cut straight to the chase. Let's talk about it in chronological order, because it's probably the easiest way to do it. And chronologically, the first thing that happened was a 5-on-3 for the Pittsburgh Penguins, a full 2 minute long 5-on-3, less than 60 seconds into the game. And the Penguins not only weren't able to convert and get a goal, but they looked horrific in that 5-on-3 power play.
I'm not going to say that that 5-on-3 set the tone for the rest of the game, but part of it was ended up being a factor in the entire game. And you that early on, you're trying to gain your momentum. You lost it right away. And I'm not so much saying that you gave it to the crowd at MSG, because there were points in that game where it was, you could hear a pin drop in there. So it's not so much that by not scoring on the 5-on-3, you gave the crowd the momentum, you gave the team the momentum. It's that you just killed your own want and urge for a fast start against a goalie like Shesterkin, who's coming back to his home ice. Like I said, I don't think the 5-on-3 drove the outcome of the game, because it really ended up being a non-factor after a little bit. But that's not ideal to not score on a situation like that early when you're trying to get a jump.
It's interesting, because the reason that, if you're a Penguins fan or you're a Penguins backer, that you wanted to see them score there is because it would have immediately taken the crowd out of it. It would have immediately put doubts in Igor Shesterkin's mind that, oh, it wasn't just playing in Pittsburgh, I really don't have it this playoffs. And because you would have already, of course, gotten out to a lead that early, even though there's a lot of time left, it would have put some doubt into the minds of the New York Rangers. And it just didn't do that. If anything, it gave them a little bit of momentum there. But what I thought was interesting, like you mentioned, it didn't really change the outcome of the game. Yes, the Penguins lost by technically one goal plus an empty netter, and adding a goal there, simple math, does make it 4-4. But at the same time, you don't know how the rest of the game plays out when it's that early that something like this happened. And also, I think what the Penguins were able to do, even though they gave a little bit of momentum back to the Rangers by not scoring, they took the life right out of the building the rest of the first period by doing the same thing they did in Pittsburgh. They suffocated the neutral zone. They forced everything to the outside in the defensive zone. Louis Domingue, again, barely had any work in the first period, and then the Penguins took the lead off of Jake Gensel's bounce off of Shesterkin's pads. And after one period, it was 1-0 Penguins, and that entire building was deflated.
Yeah, it was. The vibes going into MSG that night apparently already weren't the greatest going into the game, which, what? How? You were definitely still the better team. Let's just tell it like it is. you have the better goalie. You had the much better record all season. I would still say the Rangers had the better team per se. They were just getting outplayed, which happens all of the time. Ask the Penguins. We have the better team 9 times out of 10, and we get outplayed like nobody's business.
Yeah.
I think I do stand by it. The Rangers probably are the better team, but at this point of the series, I think it should still be very well in the Penguins' hands. That's just something that can't happen. You can't lose a game when the crowd wasn't super into it from the start. They had to, the Rangers had to fall back on techniques from 2013 and 2014 to get the vibes up. You know how long ago that was? That was before the Pens went back to back. That was those seasons we were talking about the Penguins as being just a god awful team, or at least in 15 we did that. Like they brought back their intro of that Who song. They were using clips of the time the Rangers came back 3-1 against us. They're looking to the past to try, they're looking far into the past to try and elevate their present. Whereas that's just not the right mindset for a Rangers team like this. That is calling it in. If I was to go to a Penguin game right now and they were showing, aside from lifting the cup, if they were showing clips from the 16 and 17 runs, I don't know how I'd feel about it. Because look at the rosters from those teams.
Yeah, just a compilation of Henrik Lundqvist losing his mind being pulled from the game.
Mm-hmm. Like, I looked at the rosters for the 14 and whatever. It had to be the 15 year they came back. No, 14, they came back 3-1.
Yeah, 15, they smoked us in 5 games.
15 was bad. The only players from both teams on the 14 year that are still here are Crosby, Malkin, and Letang. Almost like Gensel. Crosby, Malkin, and Letang. Chris Kreider. And Brian Boyle, who was on the Rangers that year.
Yeah.
So that is just a non-option for Rangers fans to use as a way to get excited for your game. Sure, it's the franchise thing. I get it. And Penguins historians love saying it was this date that is, because what's Friday is going to be is this date that the Penguins defeated the Rangers in 6 at home when Adam Graves decided to try and kill Mario Lemieux.
Yeah.
But guess what? That you can't look at that as a reason they're going to win.
No,
you have to look at what is on the ice right now. So the Rangers are digging into the past to get themselves amped. Sure, it's a tactic.
It's fan service.
But that's all it is. It's fan service, and we let the fan service take over. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't so much in the first period that it happened, but at the end of the second.
See, the fan service doesn't have an effect on the game. So I don't think about anything like that. Like I shot out a tweet. It's like, yeah, that's cool. You're showing 2014 clips. Don't forget the one where Alec Martinez ended your entire hopes and dreams in the Stanley Cup finals. But that's to me, that has no output, no impact on the game itself. I think the biggest impact on the game, and we'll get to it, was Jacob Trouba's elbow. But before we get to that, I do want to say one other thing, because something else happened, obviously, Evgeny Malkin over to Chris Letang. Beautiful pass to make it 2-0 there. But Jake Guentzel in this game scored 2 more goals. That makes 7 in 5 games in this series. I believe he is the only player other than Mario Lemieux, and I believe it was Kevin Stevens,
of course,
to score in the first 6 games. I think the record was 9 by Lemieux, but I think it's like Lemieux has 9, 7, and 7 is the most in a row in the playoffs. But I believe Guentzel has the most ever to begin a playoffs, which is 6 straight games with a goal. So unbelievable performance from him so far in the postseason. Milkshake Factory was going at it with a single Rangers fan in my mentions, just because I tagged him once and was like, man, their overhead has to be getting crushed, because every other day they're giving half off Jake Shakes. And you know for a fact that they are selling a whole bunch of them. But, I mean, nonetheless, their shakes are so overpriced anyway, they're still probably making a profit on it. But nonetheless, Guentzel's performance has been nothing short of spectacular. Obviously, it helped a lot when he was with Sidney Crosby and the way that Crosby was playing and that whole line was working. But even in this game, Guentzel gets that goal on basically his own volition by just being relentless with 3 shots on net and a beautiful angle shot off the pads of Shesterkin. And then a great play by Evgeny Malkin, and Guentzel does not make a mistake. And that was to tie it back up at 3 late in the second period. So Jake Guentzel and his performance, if they're going to do anything without Sidney Crosby, which we'll discuss here in a couple minutes, it's going to be because Jake Guentzel continues his torrid pace throughout the Stanley Cup playoffs.
It will be. It will be. It's all eyes are going to fall to him for sure because he's on this scoring streak, which we all know isn't going to last forever, but by God, it has to last a little bit longer.
One more game would be preferable.
Bare minimum.
At least.
I don't want to say it's not fun times right now, but it just kind of it feels a little ominous. I mean, we're recording this as we're waiting on Mike Sullivan to have an early press conference. Mm-hmm. We're going to get to the bread and butter of why he's having an early press conference soon.
Yeah.
And just going into game five, I felt more confident in us winning back at home in six than I did winning last night in five. I don't know why. Just something about that PPG Paints Arena crowd was so into it for two phenomenal games where we chased Igor Shesterkin, where we chased the probable Vezina winner. And I got my hopes up a little bit going into game five when I heard that fans didn't seem super into it, that they were reverting back to 2014 tactics, that they needed quite a bump to get the fans into it. And then I got even more confident whenever we went up 2-0 and there was about half the game left and then kaput, right?
Mm-hmm.
But again, so now my confidence will be regained tomorrow. I just kind of need a reprieve today, man.
It takes a while to whenever you take a loss like that, including the fact that the Pittsburgh Penguins lost Sidney Crosby, and we'll get into that now. Yeah. It is a deflating feeling because you had such a stranglehold, not only on the series, but on that game as well. The Pens were up 2-0 at this time. There was about 7 minutes remaining in the second period. The Rangers had nothing going. The Penguins defensively were shutting it down like they did in the two games in Pittsburgh. And then it happens. Sidney Crosby tries to cut towards the middle of the ice, tries to drive towards the net. And all of a sudden, a stick from Trouba comes in as he's coming at him pretty fast. You know he was trying to take the body, which you can't blame him. That's probably the only way you're going to get Sid off the puck is if you try to take the body on him. But instead of hitting him square and hitting him legally, he hit him with an elbow in the head, which causes Sid to have what is believed to be a concussion. Right now, the official word as of this moment is an upper body injury still being evaluated. That's what head coach Mike Sullivan said at the end of the game. But there was clear head contact. You saw the way he reacted when he got back over to the bench. So he was clearly held out due to probably concussion protocol. And we don't know the extent of the injury. We'll find that out, like you mentioned, here in about 15 minutes. And we'll have live reactions on this show. So we'll have a reaction before we wrap up today.
Yeah, it's not exciting. It's not exciting. Did you see the image Mike DeFabo tweeted, by the way?
Is it the one
walking solemnly by him? Oh no, I had so many intrusive thoughts when I saw that image.
Well, on the bright side, it does mean they don't think they need somebody to help him with his balance.
That's fair. I mean, it was an elevated plane he was walking on.
Ricard Raquel would not have been able to make that walk by himself after game one.
No, and that's another.
That's where he was at,
and that's another piece that's going into this whole series. Especially in Game Five, I noticed it. I said to myself before the Crosby injury that the Rangers look like they're hitting high in the Trouba elbow in the first 20 seconds. I was like, and it looks like they're throwing for whatever reason. I remember also thinking like the second if we go up 2-0, make sure Crosby's not on the ice with Reeves for a single second.
Here's the thing, though. Ryan Reeves has never been, like, to my knowledge, Ryan Reeves has never been blatantly dirty. Whereas Jacob Trouba, we've seen a couple instances, and I believe, I wish I remembered who it was, but somebody went down through and posted every single borderline hit from Trouba, and some of them were clean. Some of them, like the Jujhar Kara hit earlier this season for the Blackhawks, was about the same thing. You see that little chicken wing come out. You see the elbow extend right before contact, which is where that becomes illegal. And you saw the same thing on Wednesday evening where when you look at that still frame, I know a still frame is not the best way to judge any of these hits, but that still frame does show the elbow so far away from Trouba's body directly contacting with Crosby's face and nothing else. To me, it is similar to when you see a player skating by, missing on the body check, but sticking his knee out.
Right.
It might be a reaction. It might not be intentional, but it's still dirty. It should have been called in the moment, but it wasn't. But nonetheless, it is something that right now has Sidney Crosby's status in doubt for the entire near future, specifically in game six.
Yeah, and you mentioned that sticking the knee out. Oh, you mean the play that killed Igor Shesterkin?
Yeah.
You mean the sticking the knee out on Jeff Carter whenever you are well aware you have far more padding than he does? He's skating toward the boards, you're skating out, and then you're the one that lies there for 20 minutes dead? Honestly, now that I see we're going to record a bit here,
yes,
man, am I ready to go heel mode on the Rangers because I'm over this team. We're five games in. I shouldn't be over this team. The way we handled them, going up 3-1, mm-hmm. I should be singing their praises of being a god-awful franchise that has been carried by a goalie. But no, here we are because they want to throw elbows and play like assholes.
Well, here's the thing about all of that, and I saw some more level-headed Rangers fans push back on this, and I appreciate the ones that actually can have a civil conversation, which there's Penguins fans that can't have a civil conversation about this either.
No.
But I do understand that, yes, the stick of Trouba incidentally hits the leg of Crosby, which makes him lower his body, which is why the contact was to the head. But my issue is that elbow shouldn't be coming out at all. Like, that elbow is what made the contact with his head. It should not be coming out like that. And I did jokingly tag one of my friends on Twitter who is a doctor, and he gave me the medical term for it that I should look up for it. Because I was like, oh, this little twitch here, he should consult a physician. He should see what's going on with that. And of course, like very quickly, my buddy Ryan said, serratus anterior injury equals winged scapula or scapula. I'm not a doctor, but like that's jokingly, but that's my issue with it. That elbow should have never came out and it should have never made contact with Crosby's head. I understand the only reason Crosby was in that position was because Trouba's stick tripped him. But again, that's another penalty. That's tripping. And my biggest issue, though, is always going to be that elbow came out. And I understand it wasn't called at the end of the day. It wasn't called, whatever. It didn't. It vastly changed the structure of the game because Crosby wasn't there. But at the end of the day, it is a single loss. And we'll talk about the rest of the game, but it is a single loss. You have to move on. If you have to play without your captain, you do. I still think the Penguins are the better team in this series right now. I think they're more than capable of ending this on Friday night. But at the same exact time, that is a hit that could severely change the trajectory of this team in this postseason. And it was a dirty play by Trouba, whether or not it was intentional.
It was. It doesn't help. Okay, fine. Maybe he didn't try and hurt him. Well, why were you throwing elbows? Because guess what? You did it earlier in the game.
Yeah.
We have receipts of this game. Not even old games. Not even all old teams. And you were with the Jets. I saw that clip too. Not even those. Earlier in the game, 20 seconds into the game, we have a literal receipt of you already throwing elbows. I'm not going to say this is on NHL officiating. I'm not. But it is definitely on Jacob Trouba here for having a receipt of an elbow earlier in the same exact contest against a line mate of the one you just took out.
Yeah, the second most important player to the series for the Penguins.
Yeah. So don't give me that it's a clean hit or that it's an unfortunate hit. It is because an elbow came out, you do not throw. He got penalized for it earlier. If anything, the referee should have been watching a little more for an elbow from Jacob Trouba because he already had done it. And like I said, it looked like the Rangers were going up high on a lot of hits. That's just, don't give me that it's not a dirty hit. I already see this clown in New York who has a radio show in New York.
Sean.
Yeah, that's his name. Company stuff. I didn't want to dig deeper. I just, what are you talking? First of all, every tweet of his is getting ratioed and it's hysterical because I don't think he knows what ratioed means judging by his interactions with people. Mm-hmm. But you can't say that it's a clean hit when clearly it's not. I'm just going to leave it at that.
Listen, and at the end of the day, Twitter discourse is Twitter discourse. It doesn't really make a difference in anything. People are going to have their opinions. If you're from New York and you're a diehard Rangers fan, you're going to think that's clean. That's the bar none factor. I'm not going to argue with New York fans when they're clearly, you know, biased in this situation. It's the same thing on our side. There might be a little bit inherent bias there, but in my opinion, it was, and you can take that for what it is. And honestly, it's not even like I'm alone, you're alone. It's not like it's just fans saying this. Here's a clip of Mike Sullivan after the game when asked if he thought that the hit was intended to injure Sidney Crosby.
Did you see the hit?
I did.
You probably have the same opinion I do.
Mike Sullivan's pretty blunt whenever he's not happy, We saw it back in Calgary and somebody asked, hey, is there anything you could take out of this game that was positive? He said, no. And they said, do you want to elaborate on that? He said, no. When he's short like that, that's how you know he's upset. He's not John Cooper, who's going to go out here and say something stupid and blatantly, idiotic. He's going to say, listen, this is what I feel. And I don't need to elaborate on it because you know how I feel by saying three words. He thought it was dirty. I'm pretty sure anybody that watches the way that the elbow hit Crosby in the head from how far away it was from his body, it's different if he hits his shoulder and then the elbow comes up, which is still a little borderline, but it's borderline. When the elbow was out like a chicken wing, it's dirty, and that's the end of the story for me.
You're right, and the story can now continue since 10 minutes ahead of schedule. We have updates from Mike Sullivan already. Yes, okay. I shot you a text while the first Sullivan clip was playing, just saying we have updates, or at least quotes, because it's going to be a bunch of probably nothing. We have to remember this, because there is no significant update on Sidney Crosby. From Mike Sullivan, Sid will be evaluated when he gets back to Pittsburgh. So they're still in New York doing this. Love it. And then when he was asked about, if the head injury, warrants discipline, the Trouba hit warrants discipline we have. It's not my responsibility to share my opinion. That's the league's job. Bunch of nothing. He also went on to say Raquel and Dumoulin are status quo. So.
Yeah, so again, nothing really happening, and now the fact that they're back in New York just tells me that they wanted to get this at 9:30 because they have travel plans a little bit later.
Yeah, and I'm just going to try and keep reading Twitter in case anything else pops in. The next update I'm kind of waiting for is Tristan Jarry.
Yeah, so we'll talk about that whenever it pops up, but at the end of the day, I think we should lay this discourse about Trouba to rest. We both believe that it was a dirty hit, whether it be intentional or not. The placement of the elbow that far away from the body, in the same way that it is like a knee when you see somebody missing a hit and sticking their knee out, it might be reactionary, but it's dirty nonetheless. And in this case, when you have the prior receipts from Trouba in this very game, it seems like intent to injure. But again, like Sullivan, it's not our place to take down punishment and to hand down punishment to Jacob Trouba officially. Let's talk a little bit more about a couple other players for the Penguins in this game. Let's start with Louis Domingue. I thought he played horrifically. I think early in the game, you saw the same thing that you saw on game 3 and in game 4, which is why there's people in Pittsburgh saying, hey, it's his net. He's the hot hand, because the defense was able to shelter him and he was able to make the saves, and that's fine. He's an NHL goaltender. Even if he's an AHL goaltender, he should be able to make the saves whenever there's nobody in front of him, when there's no deflections coming, and he's done a really good job at rebound control. I will give him that. That's the big thing. He's been able to swallow up, not allow big rebounds. But late after the Crosby injury, three straight goals, and then a fourth one at the start of the third period. At least three of those, you need a save. But at the same time, just make one of them. Like, every single goal was a shot that he should have been able to save. You would have liked to at least get one of them. You got none. And then after the fourth goal, he finally did make a save. But at that point, it's too little too late. Your 2-0 lead became a 4-3 deficit that you couldn't come back from.
Yeah. No. Man, this is kind of what we expected. I don't know why I'm not super surprised that this happened. It is our third string goalie who spent most of the year in the AHL. It's a different league.
Yeah.
Sure, he has NHL caliber potential, but I mean, he's the third string guy. He was brought in to be the third string goalie. And he didn't have the ice time this year to really get comfortable in the net. And then you tack on just a driving New York Rangers team. You have to make stops. Yeah, but I mean, again, it's four goals in the game that he's getting four. And he gave up four of the five goals again. So it's the issue of outscoring our problems is going to persist, it looks like.
Yeah.
And we can do it. We just need certain players to find the back of the net. Ideally, one of them being Crosby, but we don't know what's going on there. So this is going to be a problem if Jari's not healthy. But judging by the skating and the taking NHL shots, he should be back soon. And I mean, sure, maybe our confidence picks up a little and we get a couple more saves, but it's still the Rangers. We still saw the way the Rangers took care of Jarry earlier this season. Mm. I think we need to just find a way to get that one more win and preferably do it on Friday.
Here's the thing with Louis Domingue. We've been playing with our third string goaltender. I hate when I say that. The Penguins have been playing with their third string goaltender from the second overtime of game one.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first time that it bit them in the ass to the point where it cost them a game.
Yep.
Because it didn't cost them game number two. It didn't. The Penguins cost themselves game number two, meaning not Louis Domingue. Louis Domingue cost the Pittsburgh Penguins this game, along with, of course, Crosby being out, but you could still make those saves, and it doesn't. The game doesn't end that way. So that one's on Louis Domingue, and I hope the people that are crazily going out there and saying that it's his net because he's the hot hand, finally starting to actually look at the numbers there. I don't hate Louis Domingue. I know it's coming off like I dislike the guy. He's done everything for the Pittsburgh Penguins that he possibly can, and he's done a great job. Like I said, his rebound control has been phenomenal, but I also am able to recognize that he is nothing without the fact that this Penguins team, forwards and defense core, are doing a great job at insulating him in his own zone. And that's what they're going to need to do to take game number six at home, because even though he's half decent, like you mentioned on yesterday's show with Hunter and Zach, he's making those saves with two hands up against his blocker. He's flailing around a little bit more. He's unsteady. He doesn't have a base. And it's working, but it's not sustainable. And if the Penguins can get out of this round, you bet your ass that the second Tristan Jarry is ready, he will be in there. And you will notice a massive difference in just one period of having Tristan Jarry. I think that's the issue. People have been watching it for so long that they're believing it's the best case scenario, that they don't remember how good Tristan Jarry was at the regular season and what it's like to have a goaltender like that. Cause it's not like the Rangers have had one either. They might've won game five, but Igor Shesterkin to me is still lost.
That's a second career playoff win. Like he's not in this really.
Not only that, people are saying, well, he made the saves that he needed. He was not tested in that game at all. The Penguins did not put any pressure on that goaltender, and they still scored three goals.
Yeah.
The three best chances they had all went into the back of the net. He is not back. And to think that he's going to be able to do it in Pittsburgh, he might. Listen, he's going to win the Vezina Trophy. He has that ability. He has that, not charisma, but he has that in him. He could come out and steal game six, but all indications are that he is not back. He is not confident in his ability. He was still it looks like he has Vaseline on the inside of his pads because he is sliding way out of position whenever he tries to freeze a puck. So both goaltenders in this series have not been solid. No. Neither of them have stolen a game. The closest thing to it was Igor Shesterkin in game one, and he has not been that same goaltender for the past four games.
And he lost that game.
Exactly.
79 saves. Congratulations. L. Yeah. You went down 0-1.
Yeah.
He's a great goalie. Sure. He's behind in the series.
Yep.
Losses. So, L's. Take it.
So the goaltending is a non-factor on both sides right now. I mean, it is a factor, but I don't see any of those goaltenders stealing game six. If anybody, I do think it's Igor, but he hasn't shown the ability in the last four games of this series.
And he's never played well in an away game in the playoffs.
Yeah, small sample size. But yes, you're right.
Never. It's 0%. I don't care about sample size because Louis Domingue is a small sample size.
True.
And his sample size is bigger so far. His percentages are bigger so far.
Yeah.
Not so much in statistics, but in terms of getting victories and playing well in front of PPG Paints crowds.
Yeah. The last thing I want to mention about this game, and we won't stick on this too long, the Penguins need Evgeny Malkin to get his head out of his ass. I've sworn a lot in this episode. I should probably pull it back on that, but nonetheless, it warrants it when Evgeny Malkin does the stuff that he did in the third period there. Without Sidney Crosby, the Pittsburgh Penguins need Evgeny Malkin to be, at the very least, not an idiot. And that's what he was in the third period. I understand the one scuffle. He was clotheslined. He was tackled. He was grabbed by Ryan Lindgren across the face and pulled down. He's going to react to that. I don't want him to sit there and just take that sort of abuse. So I get it. But to a certain extent, that needs to be reined in. You need to push the guy off and get him back on the score sheet. I know that's harder said than done, so I'm not really going to get on him about that. But the Kevin Rooney play with 7 minutes left in the game, that can't happen. You cannot take that penalty with 7 minutes left in a game where you're trailing by one, and whether or not he's played well, that's Igor Shesterkin, that's the Vezina Trophy winner. Crosby is out. You need to not only be on the ice and available, you cannot be taking a penalty to put your team behind the eight ball shorthanded with only 7 minutes left in a game where you could potentially end the series and get your captain the rest he needs before the next time you get out on the ice. To me, that was one of the most boneheaded things I've seen from Malkin. He's done a lot of them. We saw it earlier in the season when he got suspended for 4 games. He needs to be smarter than that. I cannot stress that enough. He cannot be that boneheaded. He cannot go red mist like that, especially when Crosby's out. Now, I don't want to say he had an awful game because 2 absolutely beautiful assists. The one to Letang that made it 2-0 and the one to Gensel that tied it up at 3. That's what you need from him, but you cannot get it with the other side of it. It's Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. You can't get both if Crosby's not there. It's easier when Crosby is there because he can make up for it because he is Sidney freaking Crosby. But without Crosby, Malkin cannot have that evil half come out and take stupid penalties that cost him, because it did cost him in game 5.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, it did. It's, man. The Evgeny Malkin conversation. We're back. Welcome back.
It's not even that stupid. He's not good. He's bad for the – it's just he needs to be smarter about that. He's still the second best player on this team and in this franchise, and he still deserves to be brought back. Like, I'm not going that far, but he can't do stuff like what he did with Kevin Rooney and take that penalty.
Yeah, no, absolutely that. It's just this conversation that's been being had so often recently, especially because it's a contract year and we're getting down the line and everyone's talking about this could be the last run with the core. And you're right. It very well could be. Mm-hmm. I'm just echoing your statements here that he can't be stupid. He can't be dumb. He has to play smarter, more than just penalties. The giveaways need to go down. The smart play on the ice during the game needs to go down. He needs to just be a bit more of the old wise veteran that at this point in his career he should be.
Mm-hmm.
I know we talked a little while ago too about some of the faster players on this team, and I still don't think Malkin is fast. But boy, it'd be nice to see a little speed from him, especially now if it's going to be him centering that top line. I mean, things are going to get tricky if we really are down Crosby here and have to go with Malkin, because sure, we've seen Malkin take over with Crosby out before. This is a different Malkin, though, I think. I don't think we're going to get that if this is how it has to go. I don't see us getting that same level of Evgeny Malkin when it comes to that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it is anymore. I don't know if maybe the vibes are off on Malkin, but I don't see that same world eater coming out if we're forced to go with him. I'm not saying he's not going to be good. I'm just saying it's not going to be that same level.
Yeah, and we'll have to see. I'm looking for more updates from that press conference. It looks like there's not much else coming out, especially about Tristan Jarry as of yet. But nonetheless, we're going to take a quick break. When we return, we're going to look forward to Friday's game number 6, because it's going to be very pivotal for the Penguins to end this series on home ice. We'll be back right after the break. What's going on, hockey fans? The pursuit for the Stanley Cup is on. And DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, has an unbelievable offer for the most exciting playoffs in sports. New customers can bet just $5 on any team to win and get $100 in free bets no matter the outcome. Whether they win or lose, you're a winner. Looking to turn a small bet into a big payday during the playoffs? With DraftKings same game parlays, you can do just that. Create your own parlay by combining multiple bets, like which team will win, how many goals will be scored, and more. It's your shot at an even bigger payout. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable. Best of all, you can deposit and withdraw your cash at your convenience. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Make sure to use promo code THPN and bet just $5 on any NHL team to win to get $100 in free bets no matter what. That's code THPN at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details. Welcome back to the Tip of the Iceberg podcast, brought to you as always by the Hockey Podcast Network. I cut you off at the end of that, Horwat. Did you have something else to say? No?
Nope, nothing else. Just because it was no other updates. I had a quote on Jari, but it's just that he's making progress. No more, no less.
Yep, no more, no less. Just status quo, same thing from Mike Sullivan saying, let's get this over with so I can get on a plane and get back to Pittsburgh.
I don't know why everyone thought was started. I mean, us included. I don't know why everyone was freaking out about, hey, he's talking earlier than normal today. Oh, he just had a flight to catch and had to get his daily press conference in. Moving along.
Yeah, I don't think any of us really... Usually, I would think the Penguins would have flew home last night after the game, but they chose to stay in New York, which is something that normally doesn't happen when it's playoffs. But nonetheless, it was a nothing press conference, basically no updates. And that's perfectly fine because that means they're not as worried about Crosby to be able to be like, yeah, we need to definitely get him checked now. It's like, okay, we can wait until we get back to Pittsburgh so our own physicians can see it. So it's not life-threatening, which with a guy with that injury history, you always have to have that in the back of your mind, especially the amount of times he's been injured with head injuries and concussions in his career up to this point.
Yeah.
But let your face. Let's move on and just talk about game six. Obviously, the big question is going to be, can they win this game without Sidney Crosby? Because in my mind, I'm not sure after seeing that, the only way he would play is if they said, you know what, we're up 3-1 in the series. We're up 2-0 in the game. Sit out the rest of this one. We'll be cautious with you. But if it's anything more than that, he's probably not playing on Friday night. So, Horwat, do you think they can win this game without Sidney Crosby in the lineup?
So I do think it's possible. I do. Mm-hmm. He may have 9 points in five games played, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I do still think it's possible because of the things that we have seen from the rest of the team on home ice against the same exact Rangers lineup. Plus a Lindgren, so be it. I think it's possible. It's just everything has to go right. That's the only thing. Everything has to go right. Like, we need Malkin to be a good player and a smart player. We need the depth to show what they've shown flashes of so far this playoffs. We need Louis or Jari to be competent in net. And we know Jari will be. Louis needs to be a little more competent. But again, home ice, he's going to gain that confidence back. And game six, home ice, we're going to talk about the home ice a lot. The home crowd, my God, get in Igor's head immediately.
Yeah.
Yell at him during warmups.
If there's an Igor chant during warmups, that'd be insane.
Yell at him during warm. Do whatever it takes. And I think it's possible. I do think it's possible. Oh, yeah. It's going to be hard one. It's going to be a hard one. And game six might be the most stressful thing. Oh boy. The most stressful first round game I've ever seen. But I'm all about it. I just think there's something different about this series that makes it a little more stressful. Don't know what it is. Could be the last 3 years talking. But there's something that can happen here for sure. And add on the home crowd, add on all of the madness that has happened this series already. I think it's possible, but almost everything needs to go right.
Yeah. I have a couple things on that. First, with the whole question about Sidney Crosby, the 2017 Washington Capitals were a much better team than the 2022 New York Rangers. And if you remember in 2017, Matt Niskanen cross-checked Sidney Crosby in the head. He missed a game. The Penguins went out and I believe almost won that game. Oh no, they did win game four. They lost game three in which Sid left in overtime.
Yeah.
And then they went out and they won game four without Sidney Crosby. Yeah, so the Penguins were able to do it back in 2017. I understand the Penguins of 2017 were a much better team than the Penguins of 2022. But the thing is, the Penguins of 2017 were not as good as the Capitals. They just upset them. The Penguins of 2022, in my opinion, right now, are a better team, even with a third-string goaltender, even without Sidney Crosby, than this New York Rangers team, the way they're playing. Part of that is because their head coach is an idiot.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Hunter said it yesterday, and to a point, I agree. I'm like, he has not done a really good job coaching the series, but last night emphasized that. He made no adjustments heading into Game 5, and they won that game on the skill and talent and the luck of their young players in Lafreniere, Kako, and Hedl, who are the only players on that team right now that have me any type of apprehensive. The problem with Gallant's coaching, you're going to play 11 forwards and 7 defensemen. I get you're unsure of Lindgren because he was injured. And even at a point this game, in game 5, he was injured and they didn't know if he was going to come back. I understand you're trying to ease him back in, but you're already going a man short on the forward side. Okay, that's fine. But they don't even play.
Who was Ryan Reeves?
No. They played Reeves, the seventh defenseman.
Oh.
They didn't play him. It was not Braun. It was the other guy, Nemeth. Patrick Nemeth did not have a single shift until Lindgren got into that scuffle and got injured. He was riding the bench. So you're intentionally putting your team down in an elimination game. 2 players. You're playing a forward down, and you have a full. The reason you're playing a forward down is so you had an extra defenseman. You didn't use your extra defenseman. It is the most idiotic thing I think I have ever seen.
Maybe the Rangers should force him to take a taxi out of town.
Here's the thing: their previous coach wasn't much better.
So okay. Also, is Gallant not line matching?
He's not.
How, man? Like, how are you going to play against? I mean, sure, he got hurt, but how are you going to go into a matchup against Sidney Crosby on one line, Evgeny Malkin, all of his Evgeny Malkin-ness on another line, and not line match that? How?
Pure narcissism. That's what I truly think it is. Gallant really thinks that his forwards are a match, that Mika Zibanejad is a match for Sidney Crosby, and he's not.
No.
I'm waiting for it to bite me in the butt, but Mika Zibanejad has been a ghost. Artemi Panarin has 2 goals. One of them was a bank shot off of Mike Matheson. He's, for the most part, been a ghost. This is an issue because Gallant refuses to line match, refuses to get them any sort of good matchup. That's why I have faith in the Pittsburgh Penguins, even without Sidney Crosby, because you're giving Mike Sullivan now 2 days and home ice advantage, which means last change, to figure out a way to beat a team that they have outperformed vastly in the majority of the 5 games already. That's why I have faith, even with Louis Domingue and all of his woes, even without Sidney Crosby. You add in a guy like Drew O'Connor, guess what? He's not Sidney Crosby. He's not. He's not going to score a goal. He might not even play more than 5 minutes. But in those 5 minutes, you know what he's going to do? He's going to play Sullivan's system. He's going to make it very difficult for the Rangers to do anything when he's on the ice. That's why I have faith in the Penguins, even without Crosby. Now, the question of how much further can they go if they win on Friday, they can't. They can't win another round.
Nope.
They can't win a full round without Crosby. If they do, I will come on this show and say I was stupid, I was ignorant, but especially when you're going up against a team like either the Bruins or the Hurricanes, if you don't have Crosby for that series, it's not happening. I'll give them a 25% chance, and I feel like that's more than most without Crosby. But nonetheless, they can win on Friday, and that's the important part.
They can win on Friday. They can absolutely win on Friday. Mm-hmm. Sunday would be heart-wrenching,
awful,
regardless of winning or losing on Friday. But
do we know what time that game would be Sunday, or are they waiting to see what happens?
They're gonna wait. They're gonna wait because I think we're 7:30 on Friday. First time this series, we're 7:30.
I am working on Sunday, so even though I work from home, I would like to not have to have my attention split for that. But nonetheless, we shall see what happens with that. Obviously, I had in the rundown, we'll talk about Jari and Raquel. No new updates on Tristan Jarry and Rickard Rakell, but luckily, Rickard Rakell is practicing in a full contact sweater. He's done it twice now, so he seems like he's on the mend. I don't know if that'll be enough for him to play on Friday, but also Tristan Jarry joined the team on practice on Wednesday, even though it was an optional morning skate, but it was nice of him to be able to be back there. And even Mike Sullivan said on Wednesday that is a massive step for him to be joining the team again.
Did Raquel take a regular practice? Because he took the optional skate with that jersey on, and Sullivan said, yeah, that's just because there's no real
It was not a full contact practice. He has not had one yet, but it's still an encouraging sign that he came out back-to-back days with a full contact sweater on.
It is. It's just the way Sullivan almost basically debunked it. But yeah.
Yeah. That's what I said. I don't think he'll be ready for Friday. If he is, it'll be a lot of steps, especially considering we're not going to know today because they're not going to take the ice at all today. But yeah, nonetheless,
especially since he said status quo today. So
yeah, but nonetheless, the Penguins do have both of those guys very close to returning to the ice with the Pittsburgh Penguins. So let's finish off this segment by giving a couple keys to win this game. For me, the biggest key is stay out of the penalty box. We saw it in game number 5 again. The Rangers were 1-for-3 on the power play, and similar to what Zach said yesterday, it was a lot of waiting for the time to run down. I thought they did a decent job at clearing the puck yesterday, better than they've done in the previous games, but you can't take penalties against this team because that is their bread and butter. That is what's going to lose you the game if you continue to take penalties, specifically a guy like Evgeny Malkin.
Oh, yeah. Stay out of the box. Big names, stay out of the box. Penalty killers, stay out of the box.
Yeah.
And genuinely, just don't take any penalties just because of how high-flying that power play can be. Even if you are on home ice, it's still not safe. I mean, hell, don't let them take penalties. You know how many times I've looked up and seen the Rangers racing down on us shorthanded?
A lot.
How about we don't let them take penalties either? Let's just play 5-on-5 because we're burning them in that category. 8 of Crosby's 9 points were 5-on-5.
Yeah.
That's disgusting. He's so good. Sure, he's out, but there's still a possibility to win. And one of the keys is going to be staying out of the box, tightening up defensively, and getting a save, getting important saves, getting the timely saves. They don't have to be hard, difficult, flashy saves. They can be the simple shot to the chest, but they have to be timely. I think that's going to be the big part for whoever's in net, whether it is Louis or Jari. It's going to be collecting the timely saves and making them smart and not letting up the huge rebounds and keeping the Rangers defense, who can score on you at will, at bay as well. And another part, if we're down Crosby, we got to see the good Gino. Got to see the good of Evgeny Malkin. I think there's a bunch of factors that go into this game, but staying out of the box, getting the timely saves, and just seeing Gino do – I mean, he has 5 points, so I don't want to say do anything. But despite 5 points, that's just – it's the Crystal Tang effect. He's got all these points, but damn, does he look bad sometimes.
He has scored in some of the big moments. He had those 2 assists last night, which was very impressive. He had a massive triple overtime goal, and he also created – his one assist was a creation of the Game 3 winner to Danton Heinen. So he's doing it in the big moments, but with Crosby out, he needs to be doing it the entire game. And that's the thing that I think you're trying to get at, and I agree with it wholeheartedly. The last key that I have is if it is Domingue, which I think we're leaning towards it's probably going to be Domingue, but if it's Louis Domingue in net for Game 6, you need to insulate him like you did in Game 4. Play exactly like you did defensively in Game 4, and eventually you're going to score a goal. You just got to make sure that you don't lose the game. And the Penguins, if it's a war of attrition, which Mike Sullivan, his system, lends towards it being that, if you make it a war of attrition, you will win against this team because this Rangers team is young. They are impatient. They will either take a stupid penalty or they'll have a defensive breakdown that'll give you an opportunity to take the lead. And Igor has just not been that guy this series. So if you can properly insulate Domingue like you did in Game 4, by the end of Game 6, we'll be seeing hockey handshakes.
Yeah. Good Lord. Good Lord.
At least we hope. But we're going to take a quick break. When we return, our shout-outs and call-outs to finish off the show. We'll be right back.
Hockey fights, lifestyle, and tales from a first-round draft bust? We have it all and more on the Hockey Podcast Network, your home for boutique hockey content and podcasts covering every team in the NHL.
Welcome back to the Tip of the Iceberg podcast, brought to you as always by the Hockey Podcast Network. We have our shout-outs and call-outs, and you know what? I'm not going to belabor this fact. I'm calling out 3 specific New York Rangers. Jacob Trouba, Igor Shesterkin, and Ryan Strome. Those are the only players on New York that I cannot stand at all. Everybody else, you know, specifically the kid line, I've enjoyed watching them. It's giving me anxiety attacks because of how good they are, and it's doing it against a team that I would like to see win. But the only 3 players that I can't stand, Trouba, Shesterkin, and Strome. Trouba, He plays hard, and that's fine, and I like that. I think there's not enough players that play a physical style of hockey. I think there's still a place for that in the league. But his tendency to elbow people is dirty. Mm-hmm. And it might be a reaction, but that's not good. You need to teach that out of that player at that point, because he's done it several times. He did it to Jujhar Khaira and sent him off on a stretcher earlier this season. And he did it to Gensel early in this game before doing it to Sidney Crosby, which has this entire series in flux. So, yeah, I can't stand Jacob Trouba because he can't understand how to keep his elbow tight to his body. Even Tom Wilson keeps his elbow tight to his body. Like a player that has been the poster child for Department of Player Safety doesn't do shit that blatantly, obviously dirty. And that's saying something. Shesterkin, I don't like him because I think he's a whiny little bitch.
Yeah.
I said I need to stop swearing on this one, but I really can't because these three guys just irritate me to that level. His whole flopping tactic started way before he ran into Carter.
Oh, yeah. Well,
several times in the first two games, specifically in that triple overtime game. There were three or four instances where he barely got touched and he said, oh, and it's annoying. It's frustrating to watch a game where a goaltender who has that much talent is that much of a cheap and cheating, like flopping NBA player, basically. I've seen less egregious flops on the freaking soccer pitch than what I've seen from Shesterkin in this series, and it irritates me. He hasn't had it this postseason, and it must be a mental midget thing in that instance, because when he's great, he's confident, he's waving at people, but when he's bad, he's flopping like he's playing over in La Liga or something like that. And then Strom, I don't know why. He hasn't done anything specifically, but he just seems like a trust fund child. I don't know this man. I don't know his life. I don't know his circumstance. So I can't say anything personally, but he acts as if he's a trust fund child. He plays with a sense of entitlement that he gets from playing on a line with Artemi Panarin and Mika Zibanejad, two players that are so vastly better than him that he thinks he's on that level. He's not. He is not that good of a player. And also the fact that he goes after players after the whistle, but in between the whistles, during play, he won't do a damn thing. He will not. You watch him play, he stays away from contact. He doesn't do a single thing. But the second that whistle blows and play is over and there's somebody with their back turned to him, he's going to go up behind him, send him a cross check, face wash him, punch him in the face. He did it yesterday, and he gave the Penguins a power play. That sense of entitlement is just misplaced because I think he is such a what is the word I'm looking for? Oh, mediocre NHL player. But he has that entitlement because he plays with two superstars. And it irritates me. So those three players, everybody else in the Rangers, honestly, they're great. You know, I think Gallant's an awful head coach. But Reeves, for what he does it the right way. That kid, Lafreniere, has been, like, if it wasn't for how bad the officiating has been in this series on both ends, the story of the series for New York would be Alexis Lafreniere in his first playoffs.
Yeah, actually looking like the way he should have.
Extremely impressive. There's a reason that he was the third line winger and the fourth line center yesterday. It's because he's been that good.
Yeah.
So as much as I like Lafreniere and I like what Hedl's done and I like Kako's play and Adam Fox and Keandre Miller, Trouba, Shesterkin, and Strom, they're whiny little crybabies that really irritate me because of the things they do. Trouba's elbows, Shesterkin's flopping, and Strom seeming like a trust fund child. That's my soapbox. I just needed to get that out.
That's so funny. I'm just going to laugh at that because there are no friends in the playoffs. It's only enemies. You can like other players and other teams all you want. I think Keandre Miller is going to be a great player in this league. I think
he already is.
Yeah. But then I don't want to talk good on anyone else on the Rangers right now, so I'm not going to. Mm-hmm. You were talking about Panarin, Zibanejad, and Strome. Overpaid, overrated, and bad. There, I've summed it up for you.
Overpaid, I'm guessing you're saying Panarin.
Yep.
Overrated, I'm guessing you're saying Zibanejad.
Who will be overpaid next year?
And Strome, who's technically all three.
Yes. How the hell is Strome making $4.5 million?
Yeah.
What the hell?
Entitlement because he plays on a good line and is okay. Literally. The like Chris Kunitz effect. But do you have a call out, Horwat? Or yeah.
Yeah, and we can ease off of the series a little bit because you said your shout out to the series?
No.
All right, then we can leave the series to rest. It was a nice little talk. We'll be back Monday with more series talk. I'm damn sure of it. But anyway, I want to call out teams, because this has been a thing recently, and it's weird. I want to call out any team that restricts ticket sales outside of their metro area.
Yeah, it's stupid.
The Nashville Predators did it.
Again.
Yeah. So here's the thing with the Nashville Predators. First of all, you're bad. Secondly, no one wants to go to your games anyway. Third of all, what if I happen to be a Nashville Predators fan who lives in, who are they playing? Colorado. I happen to live in Colorado, or I had to move there for work, other things. And hey, I have the weekend off. I have the expendable funds to spend $200 to go to Nashville for a weekend. Oh no, I can't go because they're restricting ticket sales to locals only.
Yeah.
That's really dumb and not good to, that's not a good way to grow your team. First of all, like you want to have outsiders in your arenas in Nashville. Like that's the other part. People go to Nashville just to vacation.
Yeah.
What if they want to have, don't they have any from out of town and want to go to a game because they have nothing else going on that night? Or maybe that was the plan. I don't know. Dumb. Your team sucks. Let people in. No one wants to go to the arena anyway. Trust me, if I was in Nashville right now, unless the Penguins were there, I wouldn't go to a Predators game. They're bad. There's so many other things to do in Nashville right now. Mm-hmm. And it just brought back I think it was the Lightning that did it, that they were letting outsiders buy their tickets, but they couldn't sit in TV view.
Didn't they give them a shirt or something to cover up?
Yeah, which also stupid. Yeah. Talk about entitled. How entitled do you think you are? They did that before they won back-to-back cups. Yeah. I remember they did that before they deserved to be a little entitled about themselves. Mm-hmm. Just stupid. Let your team grow. Don't do dumb shit like this. Like, grow your team to be a national brand. Mm-hmm. Why do you think there are Leafs fans all over Canada or Rangers fans all over America? Because they let the brand grow. Sure, they're massive markets, but
yeah,
they're not going to – Madison Square Garden's not going to stop a ticket sale, highly priced ticket sale – because you're from Minnesota. Like, they're not going to do that.
And here's the thing. For this entire conversation, the answer is get better fans. And by get better fans, I mean grow your fan base. If you're that worried about the road team coming in and buying so many tickets that on the national broadcast, it's like, wow, we don't have a home ice advantage, then you need to do a better job of growing your fan base. That's on you. Honestly... For example, it's never going to happen because it's Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh fans always are the predominant amount in their own stadium, except for maybe the Pirates. But again, it's very easy to outnumber Pirates fans, whatever. Yeah. Nonetheless, if that were to happen and I look on national television to watch my team play and I see in the home arena, say it's the Penguins, I see a bunch of blue, I'm going to be incensed. And I'm going to be like, you know what? That makes me mad because I've been a good fan of this team for a long time because they've done a really good job at building that fan base and building that connections with fans such as me. If you just do the restriction thing, that's telling your fans, hey, you can come around whenever you want. We'll have a spot for you. That's not fans stick through teams through thick and thin. If you're not good enough to sell out your arena, then that's on you. Either do a better job at building your fan base or move to a college arena like the Coyotes. Because I'm sure it'll be all Coyotes fans in that 5,000-seat arena next year.
Hell no, it's not. It's still good. No, they're going to get college kids to go.
Arizona State's a similar color. So, I mean, has that little deep maroon.
Just embarrassing. You know, now you're getting me mad about Arizona. Hey, we'll send Phoenix.
Again, I don't think you're allowed to talk about the Coyotes anymore because you have no idea what they're called.
I don't know what city they're in.
They're technically in Glendale.
Oh.
But
I'll start calling them the Winnipeg Jets. Screw it.
Start calling them the Tempe Coyotes. But let's move over to shout-outs because it's already about an hour long. And my shout-out's pretty cut and dry. Fantastic performance from Carter Verhaeghe the last two games.
Oh, man.
For the Florida Panthers. Not only does he get a massive overtime winning goal in game four of the series, and it wasn't a fluke goal either. He absolutely snipe showed Ilya Samsonov. Great goal, which if they would have lost that game, they would have been down 3-1. You're not coming back from that. Like that in that series, the way that they had played, it'd be such a hard way to come back. Massive goal ties up the series, which sets the stage for him to have a 5-point game on Wednesday night, take down the Washington Capitals, and now all of a sudden, because of basically Carter Verhaeghe, they went from potentially being down 3-1 to leading 3-2 in the series.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a fun series up there. I haven't been able to watch too much of it, but just seeing the scores roll in and seeing the Capitals look pretty decent, judging by some of the game scores.
Except for the last, 2 minutes of Game 4 and the last half of Game 5, they've been very good.
A ton of fun. That's a fun series.
Without Tom Wilson, which is a massive loss.
That is huge. Because, I mean, who else is going to, send the opponents to the infirmary?
Well,
no one else on that team is going to do it.
Well, he also I know what you're saying, but he's a very good player.
Yeah,
specifically in the playoffs, he's very important to that team.
Sure, we can leave it at that.
Yeah. So who's your shout out? We'll finish it off on that.
Oh man, I want to shout out a Penguin legend on a retirement, Patrick Marleau.
Yeah.
Officially hanging up the skates after.
Go ahead.
After a year of not playing, 42 years old, you weren't going to find a team.
Boyle did the same thing. I mean, he's not 42, but.
I don't think we were looking in the Patrick Marleau bin for
a
PTO. Big shout out to 8-game Penguin legend, Patrick Marleau, who, right? He has the record for most games played ever, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the record he broke. So we're glad to be part of 8 of those. Without those 8, I forget what the record was. What do you pay?
I don't know, but it's hilarious to think that his 8 games with the Penguins was vastly important to him breaking that record.
Hey, you know what? I'll believe what I want to believe.
Yeah, that's fine. It's funny because I saw that news and I was like, maybe I should write an article about Penguin legend Patrick Marleau retiring for Fan Nation. I was like, I'm not writing that article.
I did it for the Hockey Writers whenever he broke the record. I remember doing it. I looked back at all 8 of the games because they were a disaster.
Yeah, I did the same thing for my personal thing that nobody read. But at that point, I was like, I'm going to write an article about Penguins legend Patrick Marleau. So this time both of us were like, no.
And then you saw that we won 2 of them and went, oh, no thanks.
Yeah, he scored 1 goal and that was in a loss. I think they lost 6-2 to the Hurricanes.
One goal, 1 assist. Let me find the game logs because now I'm just curious. That was the shutdown year, 1920.
Yeah, that was the year that they came back and we were like, ooh, Marleau, Hornqvist, and who was the third line center? It was Marleau, Hornqvist, and somebody else. And we were like, yeah, that's a great third line. And they did nothing against the Canadiens. Not a single thing.
Who would have been our center that year? Those 8 games were not good because LLLWWLLW. We won 3 of them.
Yeah, it was McCann, by the way.
Oh, that's right, it was.
Marleau, McCann, Hornqvist. Ugh. Or no, Tanev or something like that. It was weird.
It would not have been Tanev because he was at fourth line. He was a... Oh, how did he end up even? Damn, all right. Anyway. Big shout out to the Hall of Fame career, Patrick Marleau. That's why we're here. We're not here to badmouth him. What are we doing?
Yeah, great career.
No 1,700 games is incredible. It broke a Gordie Howe record, for God's sakes. The guy's going to be in the Hall of Fame easy. And you know what? Good on him. 3 points shy of 1,200, by the way.
Oh.
Yeah.
The best ability is availability, and Patrick Marleau emphasized that to the greatest extent, for sure. I think we were just in a little bit of a salty mood, Horwat, today. So I think there's a little bit of that, a dash of that, and everything we talked about.
Yeah, that'll do.
Yep. Nonetheless, that's going to do it for this episode of The Tip of the Iceberg. We will be back on Monday discussing the end of this series because the series will be over by the next time we come to you. We'll see if we're talking about round 2 with the Penguins. Or we're talking about
the start of a very, very, very fun offseason.
Yeah, it would be a very bad, what is it, in memoriam? Is that what it's called? Yeah, it would be a bad in memoriam there. So we'll see how the series ends this weekend, and we'll be back on Monday to break down all the action. See you guys next week. Have a great weekend, Pens fans. We'll see what happens.
You can follow us on Twitter at NickHorwat41 and at Nick_Berlansky. You can also follow the show's Twitter handle at Iceberg Podcast. This podcast can be found anywhere you get your podcasts from, so please subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts. We are brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network. You can visit them on Twitter at HockeyPodNet or at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com. Every team, everywhere.